Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Today on the show, we're going to start by talking about back pain. We'll take a closer look at lower back pain and how physical therapy might help your back feel better. With us, Lori Tynbrony, physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Lori, good to see you again.
It's great to be here, Larry.
Jill Tynbaum, our other guest, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW. And Jill, good to see you too.
It's wonderful to be here on this nice day.
We will take your questions, of course. Do you suffer from lower back pain? What other exercises do you do for pain relief? Maybe we can talk about some other general physical therapy questions as well. Certainly can. Join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email us to ideas@wpr.org. Ideas@wpr.org. Jill, why is it important for people suffering back pain to seek help of a physical therapist right when they start feeling the pain?
Right. So this is a $1 million question. And there was a study that was recently done looking at what point in someone's pain did they access healthcare services. In the past, most of these studies have only looked at one institution. This was a study that took almost 1 million people from the United States, adults between the ages of 18 and 64, and looked at when their onset of low back pain was and how soon they sought medical attention. And they divided them kind of into two groups: those individuals who received early physical therapy, which was within 2 weeks after their symptoms presented. And what they found at that 1 month mark was people who sought physical therapy services within 2 weeks of their onset of pain had a lower use of other health care. So they didn't see, they didn't have as many chiropractic visits, for example. They didn't have to see a pain specialist as frequently. They didn't go to the emergency room as frequently. And they didn't need advanced imaging such as an MRI as frequently as those individuals who waited. This is also true for invasive techniques, people who ultimately received a steroid injection. So the need or the use of steroid injections was less in individuals who saw physical therapy within 2 weeks of their onset of pain. Now, one of the very interesting things about this was they actually broke down all the information by state.
And we're terrible.
We're not very good. We were within one of the lowest percentage of individuals who utilized physical therapy early. We were in the 8 to 10% range. So we were one of the lowest cohorts here in the state of Wisconsin. And it's very interesting looking at the map. Our neighbors, Minnesota, were one of the highest states to seek physical therapy services early. So there's a lot of different theories as to why that is. Lori, do you want to make comments?
Are we stoic here? Are we stoic?
Well, I'd have to say, I would expect that the people in Minnesota are equally as stoic as the people in the state of Wisconsin, although we could get into a bit of a rivalry there. But in terms of the makeup of the state, I would expect that the people in Wisconsin are not all that different from the people in the state of Minnesota. And actually, our neighbors to the west, Iowa, also had access to services at a higher level early on than did people in the state of Wisconsin. So is it the makeup of the state where, you know, we're stoic and, you know, we just slap a Band-Aid on it and go back to work? I expect that the people in the state of Iowa and the people in the state of Minnesota have a fairly similar mindset. So it may come down to the third-party payers and how easy it is to access services. So having a system where you can access services early on from physical therapy makes sense. And in fact, UW here in Madison just placed a physical therapist in the emergency room.
Right.
The caveat here is I'm not telling people to go to the emergency room when they have acute back pain.
Right.
But what I'm saying is if you were, we have physical therapists there who can get you started on an exercise program and triage you and get you to the right provider early on. So get in and advocate for yourselves. You know, call your physician, call your local physical therapy clinic, because Wisconsin is a direct access state. You can access physical therapy services without seeing a physician first, and get in and see somebody.
And you're going to save a lot of pain down the road, plus probably some dollars,
right,
too.
Right, exactly. That was something the study showed, was that there was less dollars spent within those first 30 days in the healthcare system when individuals got in earlier. Now, going back to the direct access, almost all the states, if not all the states, have some form of direct access where a patient can go and see a physical therapist. The caveat that Lori mentioned was third-party reimbursement. So some insurance companies will pay for one physical therapy visit without seeing a physician, and then you have to see a physician. Sometimes it's a phone call and a referral just needs to be put in place, and you don't necessarily need to see the physician. And physical therapy clinics who work with insurance companies on a daily basis can help you as a patient figure out what it is you need to do to make sure that your physical therapy services are adequately covered.
The other
challenge with this is when to know, and I think we're going to open Pandora's box here a little bit, Lori, is when to know which episode of low back pain is really does require care and is beyond that little low grade muscle ache from gardening too much or from riding your bike too much or something like that. So when is this time different, or what makes me need to see care this time versus those other times?
Well, I think some of that comes down to your history. And is this something you have seen before? Like the last time I shoveled snow or the last time I did the fall cleanup in my garden, I got very similar symptoms and they resolved within X amount of time. Now, we know historically that most back pain will resolve in somewhere between 6 and 8 weeks. But if you have a history of back pain and you know this feels like the other ones you've had before, and you've seen a physical therapist, and you know what to do to treat those symptoms when you overdo it, then you start those activities and see if your symptoms resolve. If you've never seen a physical therapist before, and this is your first episode, it might be worthwhile to go in for one or two visits to get a read on, is this just overuse? Is there something more serious? Can the physical therapist teach you how to do that work in your garden or do that work you were doing outside in a way that's less stressful for your back, and then teach you how to manage that problem should it happen another time?
Thinking back to end of May when I was in a golf tournament. So I played 5 rounds of golf in 4 days and probably hit 5 buckets of balls. So my back was a little hinky when I got out of it, but it went away.
Right.
And what causes the pain anyway?
Well, the other thing, Larry, is when you're telling me this whole story about hitting a bucket of balls, which is repeated swinging without any recovery in between, and then you played, I don't know, 5 rounds in 4 days. That's a lot of swinging.
90 rounds, yeah.
Okay.
Or 90 holes.
90 holes. So if you have some sort of cause and effect, so that was a huge increase in activity. You probably hadn't used your muscles to that extent that frequently. And so you're telling me that, oh, I had this stimulus and my back responded with some soreness. When you have that kind of cause and effect, I feel a little bit better about your low back pain than the people who come in and say, gosh, I didn't do anything different. This has been my routine for days. I didn't do a single thing differently, and I have this back pain. In my mind, that brings up a yellow or a red flag. That's much more concerning than your muscle strain or your ligamentous kind of stretch soreness that you experienced from playing 90 holes of golf.
Right. Yeah. I would say that's to be expected.
Right.
Well, so typically what causes lower back pain? I mean, not the kind that I just mentioned, but...
The biggest causes of low back pain, other than I just overdid it, are some arthritis in your back, some in the little facet joints that are kind of stacked one on top of another. Those little facet joints are like every other synovial joint in your body, where they have a joint capsule and they have synovial fluid. So just like if you go to Disneyland and you walk around for 3 days in bad shoes and your knees swell because your knees are unhappy, same thing happens in your back. You just can't see it. You can't see those little joints. So when those joints swell, they will give you pain just like any other arthritic joint. And if those little joints swell enough, they can put pressure on the nerve roots because they sit adjacent to the nerve roots that come out from your spinal cord. And then that can give you radicular symptoms as well.
Right.
Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, Lori Tyne-Brody, our guest today, taking a look at physical therapy issues. And we've zeroed in a bit on lower back pain. I hope you'll join in with your own questions. Maybe you've got some back pain experiences, or maybe you have another physical therapy question as well. I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. I know some people choose to invest in expensive beds, maybe to kind of combat back pain. They might, how much do mattresses and pillows, we've talked about this, but so worth mentioning.
Absolutely. Those are really good questions. So anytime you see a physical therapist, they'll kind of ask about your daily routine. And one of the things that always kind of puts my antenna up is time of day. Oh my gosh, I get up in the morning and, my back really hurts. So the follow-up question is always, in what position do you sleep? Because if you're sleeping, especially on your stomach, you can really irritate those facet joints that Lori alluded to. So the person who tells me when they travel, or I went on vacation, I stayed in a hotel room and I didn't wake up with back pain, but at home I do wake up with back pain, that makes you start thinking that the causative factor is a mattress.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And in contrast to the people who say, I feel great first thing in the morning when mm-hmm. I wake up, but as I move through my day and I'm up more, then my back starts to hurt more. So then we're less suspicious about the mattress. So it's really a bit of detective work, which is why, again, seeing a physical therapist who can probe those questions and try to see the patterns to your pain and see if they fit a particular sort of pathology or diagnostic category.
So I do think with mattresses, if I remember right, you're supposed to replace them every 7 years. Is that right?
Something
every
8 years?
Mm-hmm. Something 7 years.
Like that.
And you're supposed to turn them every month for the first six months you have them.
Right.
Remember the mattress guy called a few years ago and told us that, you're supposed to rotate them.
Right.
So.
And I do rotate.
Do you?
Yeah, I have a king size, so I only have to rotate it a
quarter turn.
So every time I wash the sheets.
Yeah, that's a really good plan, and that is nice about a king size because you're laying at different angles all the time, which is nice.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Well, let's find out what's on Paul's mind in Milwaukee. Paul, hi.
Hi. How you doing? Good morning.
Good. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
I'm looking for some advice and maybe some direction for people who might be suffering from back pain. It took me almost 20 years for them to get me an MRI. chronic back pain, going in for pain, and they would just push me aside thinking I was looking for pills or anything, when I finally did get into a chiropractor, it took her all about a minute and a half to take measurements and figure out what was wrong with my back. So I had one leg is longer than the other, so my hips were off, and which caused my sciatica to go crazy. I did have two herniated discs and did get surgery where they removed the disc, and I still suffer from pain every day, but I could walk. You know, yeah. I don't have that mind-numbing pain going down my leg. Is there something that patients can do to break through that glass ceiling that it's really hard to do?
Those are really good points, Paul. And interestingly, there's been a lot of research that shows that sometimes MRIs and plain films are overutilized in low back pain, where it doesn't necessarily change your course of care. And so a lot of people are somewhat hesitant or slow to do imaging or advanced imaging. Here it sounds to me like we almost swung the other way, and you're an individual who probably should have had imaging
long time
sooner.
Ago. Yeah.
Yeah, perhaps sooner yeah. than later. But just know that as a general rule, imaging doesn't necessarily change the course of care of what a physical therapist would do or an allied health professional would do. Except it sounds like you're the exception to the rule, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's hard to know when you have 20 years of history.
Right.
You know, you really have to sort of be there to hear the story, to look at the pattern, to see what the exam results are, to see if it makes sense to order imaging. In general, you don't need to order imaging unless you're looking at doing some sort of invasive procedure.
Right.
So if you're going to do an epidural steroid injection, you need imaging. I don't expect you would probably go to surgery in the absence of significant symptoms without an injection first as kind of a road test to see if you respond to that intervention. But unless you're going to go to some sort of advanced intervention beyond physical therapy, chiropractic, or other conservative measures, an MRI really isn't warranted because it can lead you down the wrong path pretty easily. When they first started learning about MRIs and what normal anatomy was, they did MRIs on a whole bunch of healthy people to learn what spine anatomy looked like. And fully 50% of those asymptomatic people had findings on their MRI. So an MRI, in the absence of advanced interventions, can lead you astray.
But it does sound like Paul eventually ended up having surgery. So he was a surgical candidate for this, or became a surgical candidate. So he had some surgery. And, you know, I think this comes down to advocating for yourself. And if you're not getting the answers you need, it's perfectly fine to seek a second opinion. It's perfectly fine to see a different physical therapist. That's kind of within your right as an individual. We don't want it to come down to that, but sometimes it does. The other thing I wanted to mention here, and Lori and I always kind of talk about this, you know, connective tissue has a hereditary component. So we hate to say, oh, you know, my dad had a bad back, therefore I'm going to have a bad back. But your connective tissue, the structure of your connective tissue does have a hereditary component. So that may play a role as well. And I think that's something that as a physical therapist, we always want to know. That's why we ask about the history of your parents, things like that, if they have some musculoskeletal related issues. Mm-hmm. So I think the take-home message for Paul is, I'm sorry that this went on so long, but it's really important as a patient that we do advocate for ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Paul, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, Lori Tyne-Brody, our guests today. Trina LaSousa, our engineer. Clara Neipert, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Taking a look at physical therapy issues today on the show with our two guests, Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum and Lori Tyne-Brody from UW-Madison. And we have lots of callers online, so we'll go back to the phones. Let's go to Cheryl Ann in Delavan. Cheryl Ann, thank you for calling.
It's Cheryl Ann, but that's okay. So I just wanted to call because I have had intermittent low back pain in the past, usually probably from a mattress or sleeping wrong. But then in March, I broke my leg, femur, up high into the hip. And as I was recovering from that, I suffered really severe back pain just from being sort of cattywampus, if you will. I think everybody knows what that word means.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so my physical therapist that was initially assigned to get me back from the leg slash hip fracture then started working on my back. And one thing that he taught me was the pelvic tilt. And I really needed anyway for my hip to build up my gluteal muscles and my abdominal muscles. And that also then helps the back. And I find that, like, even when I'm driving, I will tighten my glutes and tighten my abdomen just to start working those muscles and trying to strengthen those. And so I just wanted to bring that in. And my back pain has gotten better as my hip has gotten better and as I'm not quite as cattywampus.
Yeah. Cattywampus. Love that word.
Cattywampus is a great term, and we do use it quite a bit. So you bring up a really good point of the thigh bone is really connected to the hip bone is really connected to the low back. And so we do, as a physical therapist, we always look at the neighboring joints to see if they can be contributing factors to someone's low back pain. And you gave a perfect example of how you had an impairment or you were cattywampus in your hip and how that flared up your low back. And so it is important that you really look at all the adjacent joints when you're treating somebody.
Yeah, the pelvis is like Grand Central Station for yeah. everything that happens above sure. and below. So if you're not stable through your pelvis with those gluteal muscles and the abdominal muscles that you discussed, the loads from your lower extremity and your hip get passed right through there up to your low back. So having good stability through the glutes and the pelvis is like the buck stops here. So we're controlling the motion, we're controlling the loads here in these big muscle groups rather than just passing it right on down the line, which in this case would be to your low back. So it's something that we emphasize a great deal in physical therapy, and I thank you for bringing it up.
Yeah, thanks, Sherilyn. Appreciate it very much. Heidi in Milwaukee, we'll go to you now. Hi, Heidi.
Good morning. I'm just trying to get you off. Okay. I'm having a neck issue where when I look forward and down, it gets stuck, and I have to, like, elongate my neck up to the right slightly to pop it free, and I'm wondering if I should do chiropractic or go to a physical therapist.
Well, a couple questions. When did this start, and what started it? Do you know?
I've always had a bad neck. My mother, you were talking about.
You blame your mother.
I've always had a bad neck, too, so it's just kind of been stiff for many, many years, and I, you know, move it, try to keep, you know, keep it moving side to side. I understand it can get frozen up sometimes, but and then I've heard about tech neck, so
yep,
I've
yes,
tried to
right.
keep my iPads up at eye level now.
Good.
I have a
okay.
device that holds them up, and so I'm really doing things to try to not do it, but, you know, several times a day it'll just get, like, stuck, and then
okay.
ow, 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 until I, like, elongate it. So maybe traction, maybe I've seen devices you can put on the floor to pull your neck, you know, away from your body, and you
right, right.
tie it to a doorway.
And, oh, yeah, yeah. So that's all great information, and that helps me answer your question, which is I think you should see a physical therapist. Mm-hmm. So this is not just a matter of a manipulation, but there's something going on in terms of your posture and your underlying neck mobility. Part of me feels like almost like you could be hypermobile right. and you're getting a facet joint that's a little subluxed. And so you move and turn it just right and you realign that. So going to someone who just realigns that for you, doesn't seem to make sense because you can do it yourself. What you need is someone to figure out why this is happening and then give you some activities, some strengthening exercises, some postural exercises, et cetera, to prevent this from happening again.
Right. There are core stabilizing muscles in the neck, just like we have a core at our pelvic area. Lori already talked about that earlier. And sometimes learning how to fire your deep cervical flexors to stabilize your neck is something that you need to do. So seeing a physical therapist, I think, is a great strategy for you, Heidi.
Mm-hmm. Heidi, thank you so much for calling. Let's turn to Cheryl in Cecil. Hi, Cheryl.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Cheryl.
Hello.
Oh, hi. I guess it's a weird question, I guess. I have been laid up for 3 weeks with a blood clot in my leg, a large one in my upper leg. And basically, the doctors are they put me on blood thinners and told me to stay off it. But I think I need to exercise it. What is the guidelines for that? How much exercise should I be getting?
So you need to follow your physician's guidelines on this. The reason that they don't want you exercising is they want to make sure that that blood clot dissolves or gets smaller. If it becomes dislodged and moves, for example, when you exercise and you get your heart rate up and you get blood flow going, that clot can move and have very negative consequences. It can go to your heart, your lung, things like that. So as much as you want to exercise, and we love the fact that mm-hmm. you do want to exercise, you need to follow your physician's guidelines on this to a T.
Absolutely. There's no question, especially if it's in your upper thigh. That's a gnarly place to have a blood clot. So you need to follow, as Jill said, those physician instructions absolutely to a T. And your time will come to exercise.
Right.
But in the meantime, let's not create a bigger problem. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I'm really glad you called and asked that question before you got up and started doing, you know, disco dancing in your living room. So yes. Follow your physicians. And if you're not sure what the plan is, get in touch with your physician's office and say,
how long?
It's been 3 weeks.
Right.
What's the plan? What's next?
Right, right.
So, yeah. Good call, Cheryl.
Yeah, thank you for calling, Cheryl. Peter in Pewaukee, on to you now. Hi, Peter.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning, ladies. My grandson has been diagnosed with a brachial plexus injury, and they believe it happened during the birthing process. He's had OT, PT, even has seen a neurologist. But during OT and PT in particular, they put him through stretches and exercises as, you know, necessary. And he cries all the time. He's not crying before, and he seems to settle down afterwards, but all of the therapists claim that he is not feeling pain. How could that be?
Hmm. Well, I don't know if he's feeling pain or not. It could be that he just doesn't like people manipulating his limbs, et cetera. But there is a pretty large body of literature on these brachial plexus injuries at birth, and we really want to make sure that he recovers and gets full use of that arm following that brachial plexus injury. I think there are some splints that they might be using now. Maybe Jill knows more about those, but if he's settling down afterwards, then I think that's fine. I think everything is okay. It's certainly distressing to see, you know, a baby crying during therapy. It would probably break my heart as well.
Right.
But the fact that he settles down afterwards and everything seems to be fine, I would trust their judgment that what they're doing is trying to prevent any long-term damage from that injury.
Right. You're always concerned about contractures. Mm-hmm. And, of course, as an infant, they're going to hold their arm or their limb in the position that's most comfortable for them because they don't understand that they have to stretch in the opposite direction. So I'm guessing that's probably what the physical therapist and occupational therapist are working on. So it may be uncomfortable for your grandson while it's happening. But as Lori alluded to, as long as when therapy is done, there's no lingering crying, I think that's a good indication that what they're doing is correct.
Yeah. Peter, thank you for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in too, by the way, if some open lines get you on pretty quickly. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Or email to ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Annalisa in Green Bay. Annalisa, thank you for calling.
Hi. I am at the opposite end of the age spectrum.
Okay.
I'm 80, and I'm fairly active. I've had some mild pain with my right shoulder, just lifting things or, gardening somewhat, but pretty mild. But yesterday, I was trying to lift my bike onto my rack, and I couldn't do it. It was so excruciating. And I'm just wondering why or what might be the explanation for that.
Well, first of all, hats off to you for lifting a bike onto a bike rack at age 80. Good for you. Clearly, you're a very active individual. So my first thing that comes to mind is that you might have a little bit of a rotator cuff pathology, some weakness in your rotator cuff, maybe a small tear. Many people have those as part of the age-related process. And just putting it in a certain position and loading just right can cause some excruciating pain in a joint that has otherwise had kind of some low-grade pain. So as active as you are, Annalisa, I think you should see a physical therapist. Lori, you want to jump in on some thoughts?
Yeah, so is this the first time you tried to lift your bike?
No. I haven't been biking a whole lot this summer, but...
Okay.
I've done it before.
Okay, I'm just trying to figure out how new an activity this is for you if the weight of the bike was a lot more than you're used to.
And you're extending your arms out.
Right. It's a long lever with depending upon how heavy your bike is and how high you have to lift. It's a lot of load for your rotator cuff. It sounds very rotator cuff-like. So, yeah, I agree with Jill. I'd see a physical therapist because you want to keep that arm working, especially if this is your dominant arm. You need it for the gardening, for the weight bearing on your bike handles and all the things that you're doing. So sometimes just a couple visits to get some things to do to keep your rotator cuff strong and healthy will be all you need.
Yeah, good luck, Annalisa. Appreciate your call. Diane in Madison, I'll give you a chance now. Hi, Diane.
Hi. I'm calling about osteoporosis.
Okay.
I've had it for years, and I have researched it periodically. But I'm concerned about exercising. So many times they tell you to roll up or twist. I wonder if your guests would clarify what's safe if you have osteoporosis.
So when you're talking about rolling up and twisting, are you talking about your low back in particular?
I didn't understand your question.
Are you talking, when you're talking about rolling up and twisting, are you referring to that in your back?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's fine.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm guessing the concern about the rolling up or the flexion is from a thoracic spine perspective, the kyphotic posture and ending up with a fracture there is what you're thinking up with the flexion.
Right.
Have you seen a physical therapist to be on a well-designed resistance training weight-bearing program for your osteoporosis?
No, I have not.
So I think that would be a really good strategy for you, Diane. There are physical therapists that work with this, and there's very nice guidelines as to how you can gradually and appropriately load all your joints, all your levers when you do have osteoporosis to kind of build that bone strength.
Right. And there's not a one-size-fits-all for this.
Right.
Some of it depends upon how severe your osteoporosis is, if it's primarily affecting your spine, if it's affecting other peripheral joints. If you already have a kyphotic posture, if you have a history of fractures already, all those things get taken into consideration. So what might be an appropriate exercise for you may not be an appropriate exercise for somebody else with osteoporosis. But as Jill said, in response to your specific question, the rotation and the flexion activities have to do with the tendency to fracture in your thoracic spine, particularly for women with osteoporosis. So we're particularly keenly aware of that area of your bony structure and preventing fractures there.
Yeah. Good luck, Diane. Thank you so much for calling. Marlene in Wales, we'll go to you now. Hi, Marlene.
Hi. First of all, I want to say that I've had some physical therapy for a couple of different things over the years, and it's great. But I'm wondering, right now I've got a couple different things going on, and I'm going for physical therapy. I'm also seeing my doctor. But a friend is really, really sort of favoring the idea of going to a chiropractor. Now, I'm just wondering if you could contrast when you go to a chiropractor and what they do versus what physical therapy does.
Okay.
Sure. Well, chiropractors have a different training approach than physical therapists do, and chiropractors in general are trained in high-velocity thrust and manipulation, so rapid movement of the spine and or joints. Now, having said that, there are chiropractors who specialize in other things as well, so there is certainly some crossover. Physical therapists can perform some people are trained to perform some high velocity thrusts. So there's certainly some manipulations that we share with our chiropractic friends. One of the areas of focus from a curricular perspective within physical therapy is our education piece with regards to exercise, whether it's mobility exercises or strengthening exercises, or some sort of adaptive equipment, whether it's a lumbar roll or something like that, to kind of train you to manage your condition long term. And that's something that is a focus of physical therapy education.
Right. The primary intervention provided by physical therapists across the board is therapeutic exercise. So that is our go-to for treating most both musculoskeletal and neuromuscular conditions. So we use manipulation or mobilization, which is a lower level intervention to help with symptoms at various joints, whether your spine in the spine or extremities. So we use that as an adjunct where our primary intervention is therapeutic exercise. I think in contrast to a chiropractor where the primary intervention is likely that high velocity manipulation and any of the other interventions such as exercise or laser, whatever else they might do would be secondary.
And having said that, there are many physical therapists and chiropractors who work collaboratively together. So the chiropractor may perform a manipulation and say, okay, you know, we've improved your mobility. Now go see the physical therapist and let them give you some strengthening exercises, et cetera, to make sure that you keep this mobility, et cetera. So I don't think it has to be mutually exclusive by any token of the word. Just make sure that when you're seeing one healthcare professional, you always communicate with them that you are seeing this other healthcare professional.
There you go. Thank you so much for that call. Lori Tyne Brody, Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, Associate Professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy Program at UW-Madison, and Lori Tyne Brody, Physical Therapist and an Athletic Trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Questions for them, we've zeroed a bit in a bit on lower back, but we're taking all kinds of other questions too at 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Let's turn to Ziggy in Middleton next. Hi, Ziggy.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have lower back pain, which almost feels like it's a pinched nerve. It comes around the side, the right side through the groin. I've had it before, and it's usually resolved with like a week of bed rest. It couldn't go to work. Now I only have it at night when I'm sleeping. I wake up and I'm in excruciating pain, and there's no position I can take to get rid of it. But when morning comes and I get up and start eating and moving around, I'm almost fine by 10 o'clock in the morning. The next night in bed, the pain comes back, and I just can't sleep anymore. I've tried different positions, laying down on the floor, different mattresses in the house, and it's just there's no position I can take at night for some reason.
Hmm. So the pain it's clearly in your back?
It feels like it's in the lower back on the right side, and it comes around the groin, and it's continuous.
Okay.
I can't seem to find a position where it goes away, where in the past I could find a position in bed where it would go away and I could rest.
And this is the same pain that you've had in the past. It's not a different pain.
No, it feels very similar.
Okay. And any idea what brought it on?
No. It's been the last about 4 days now, and I haven't done anything different, but my back has always been weak and tenuous.
It's interesting that weight-bearing makes him feel better. So when you're up and moving, is standing better than sitting, or does movement feel better?
It seems like I have to do the movement. If I have to keep walking around, if I sit still or lay down, it just continues to get worse. And as I can walk it off, and after about an hour or two, I feel pretty good. And the rest of the day, I can do most anything I want.
It's interesting that it's not relieved by lying down,
right?
Most weight-bearing kinds of things, like back, disc, facet, whatever, are improved when you unload those joints. So
right.
Have you been seen for this problem?
Many years ago, I was seen for it, and it was just, at that point, it was bed rest, and that came to work.
So bed rest is no longer the treatment for low back pain. So they don't want people to do bed rest, and I would expect for someone like you, bed
for
rest
sure.
would be really bad,
right?
Since it doesn't improve your symptoms. So I would go in and have this looked at again, partly because it's not fitting a pattern of most kinds of low back pain that we see, especially if it's wrapping around to your groin. It's not a big referral area from your low back.
And when we think about the paper that we talked about at the beginning of the show, Ziggy doesn't have cause and effect. He doesn't have anything he did that causes this. He's had a history of this, but his usual strategies aren't resolving his symptoms.
Yeah,
so
right.
I agree with you, Laura. I think this is a really good example of it's time to engage the healthcare system.
Right.
It's been a long time since you've seen somebody. Things have changed. Let's let's get this under
control. Where does he go?
So you could see a physical therapist. So you're Dane County. So within the state of Wisconsin, there's direct access. Depending on your insurance, you can go to, if you have UW Health, they have direct access. There are private physical therapy clinics that have that you can see via direct access. And if the physical therapist sees you and they feel you need to be seen by a physician, they will make sure that happens, and frankly can probably also get that happening more quickly than if you engaged with a physician as your first point of contact in the healthcare system.
I agree with that. So I'd probably, because of who I am, I would probably go both routes. I would probably try to get in to see my primary and say I've got this acute low back pain. I would make an appointment with a physical therapist, and I'd go to the first appointment I could get. But I do absolutely think you need to see somebody at this point, Ziggy. There's enough sort of yellow flags here that have us concerned about what's going on in your back and in your groin that you should see somebody.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Cam emailed us. He went on a week-long bike trip, Iowa.
So did we.
The last week of July. He rides old school with toe straps on a platform pedal, wearing old running shoes. The lateral one-third of his foot sticks off the pedal.
Oh, dear.
Oh, no.
Since this ride, Cam has had left foot pain that is worse in the morning and after inactivity. They've only bicycled once since the week-long ride. A four-mile walk yesterday aggravated this. Pain's not in his heel, but seems to originate at what is likely the pressure point of the bottom of their foot on the pedal and spreads over the outside and to the top of his foot. So, thoughts on that? Any treatment ideas?
Well, first of all, you know, not having your whole foot on the pedal and pushing down like that on a week-long bike trip when you're probably pushing down 80 times a minute can lead to a huge overuse kind of tendinopathy thing. I'm wondering if he was, you know, used his muscles kind of wonky and got a little cattywampus in his foot.
Well, and also if like the lateral two toes are off the pedal and the first three are on it, you're getting this instability between those two toes. So he could have developed a neuroma between those toes.
Right.
So I think Cam needs to go in and have this evaluated because it sounds like he's pretty active. Mm-hmm. He likes to walk. He likes to bike. He likes to do things. So I would go in. It's just an odd enough presentation, an odd enough history that we could speculate, but it's not like we get a lot of people showing up in our clinic who have biked for a week and toe clips with a third of their foot hanging off the edge of the pedal. So I think someone taking a look at his foot would be useful. And for the other cyclists out there, put your entire foot on the pedal so that you're – think of it as a load dispersion issue. So if you're pushing down and you're only pushing down through the first three toes, then you're not being very efficient. You want your entire foot on the pedal, so everything you push with is going into the pedal and not, you know, a third of it off to the side.
Right, and you always wonder, because you'd think you should be distributing his load evenly on these pedals, why he only has it on one side. So there's always that question as well. So, yeah, he needs to see somebody get this taken care of and perhaps get a bike fitting done at some point if he's going to ride his bike
for
a week.
Yeah.
He's, for sure.
Right.
Kathy and Madison, hi.
Hi. Hi, it's a great show. I have been to UWPT. I have seen Lori and the others. She might recognize my name or the sound of my voice or something. But we did good things in the pool, which is always good for me, walking in the pool, water walking. I have a variety of things, including two scoliosis in the spine, and I've had a lot of back pain. I am now 79, and what I'm doing now is Pilates with a personal trainer, and it's very specific to my learning to work muscles that I did not work and muscles that I probably overused during my pregnancies many years ago. So in any case, I know that both PT people today, Lori and
Jill.
Forgot her name.
Jill.
Jill, yeah, Lori and Jill. I know they both talked about exercise and the importance of working and learning the exercises real well. And when I went to the doctor, that's exactly what the doctor told me, to learn all the exercises the therapist has for me and to do them the rest of my life. So I'm doing them, and I finally have all kinds of relief. And sleeping is still a problem. Various mattresses, various positions, sleeping. But I get enough sleep to be active nearly the whole day. So I'm just here to, as a proponent for doing some exercises. In my case, it was all the core muscles that were weak that wrap around my middle and the ribs and attaching the back to the front and so forth. I was not able to not able to use a lot of that for a while because I didn't know the correct ways.
Right. Well, good for you, Kathy. It's great to hear from you, and I'm glad you're doing well. So many times people start in the pool, especially people like Kathy who have scoliosis, where they can't achieve a sufficient volume of exercise on land to control their symptoms. So we start off in the pool to try to build them up there where you have less loading due to gravity, build up some strength, build up some muscle endurance, some cardiovascular endurance, some mobility. And then we gradually transition to land. And I really love when people find a land-based exercise that they can continue on their own, such as Pilates or Tai Chi or yoga or something like that. I think when you're discharged from physical therapy, one of the important things to know is that you're not always cured, in air quotes. You may still have symptoms. You still have some pathology that likely, but what we're doing is we're transitioning from rehabilitation to wellness in the context of having some underlying pathology, whether it's arthritis or a disc herniation or scoliosis or whatever. And what we're doing is guiding you to that lifetime of exercise. And it sounds like Kathy's done that well.
Yeah, absolutely. Kathy, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, we're talking physical therapy. It really matters when it comes to lower back pain, but a lot of other places as well. Jill Tye-Nissenbaum, Associate Professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy Program at UW. One of our guests, the other Lori Tyne-Brody, Physical Therapist and Athletic Trainer at the UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. They'll be with us right up till 12:30. We'll take a quick look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us, and then we will be back. And you can join in, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Taking a look at physical therapy on the program today, Larry Mueller here with my guest, Jill Tye-Nissenbaum, Associate Professor and the Doctor of Physical Therapy Program at UW-Madison, and Lori Tyne-Brody, Lori, a physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Email in with your questions or comments, ideas@wpr.org. That's the place to go. Our lines are all filled right now, so we'll just go to the phones and to Donna in Hartford. Donna, hi. Thank you for calling.
You're welcome, and good afternoon. If I may, I would just like to reply a little bit further to a caller that called in the first segment asking the difference between chiropractic and physical therapy. And I can only chime in on being a patient of chiropractic for over 30 years. And I just would just like to humbly add that anyone that is searching for chiropractic should do their due diligence and even interview chiropractors that they might be interested in their area or who takes their insurance or whatever the case may be, because there is a huge difference in chiropractors and how they manipulate the body and the spine. It isn't all high velocity thrust manipulation. I can tell you that 100%. They do a lot of hands-on, but there's also chiropractors that delve into a myriad of modalities, as the wonderful person that I've been working with for 15 years. Mm-hmm. And so they can clear pathways and then manipulate, which doesn't require as much manipulation. They sometimes use laser, as was mentioned. Like I said, it just depends upon the chiropractor, and it depends on the patient, what you're looking for, how far into holistic healing you want to go. And I just know that everyone isn't going to come at you with high thrust and, difficulties. There's a lot of gentle manipulation chiropractors out there. So please look around due to your body type, any injuries, past surgeries, your age, just your overall physical condition. Everybody's body is different, and in my case, my body definitely changed. And at one point, I was using a wonderful chiropractor that did use more high thrust, and my body told me, I can't take this anymore.
That's really good information, Donna, and I think that can be extrapolated to a lot of healthcare providers,
sure,
physical therapists included. So do your homework, find somebody that's the right match for your needs, for someone who listens to you, who will include your perspective and your preferences in their treatment program. So
right.
I think that's really important.
And there are a lot of interventions that are not owned by any specific profession. And, you know, Donnie brought up some really good points using other tools. So things like Graston, augmented soft tissue mobilization, dry needling, all of those skills can be performed by various healthcare professionals, including a chiropractor or a physical therapist. So there's certainly within the Venn diagram, there are certainly things that we can both perform. And then there are certainly things where chiropractors have an area of expertise and PTs do. And I totally agree with Lori, Donna. You need to make sure that the all healthcare professionals that you see are appropriate for you. And within the Department of Athletics, where I work, we have chiropractors that come in and we work side by side all the time. So we share patients, we collaborate. They've shown me a couple little helpful tips on doing some manipulations. And so I totally agree. We can learn from each other. And you brought up great points.
Donna, thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Tierney in Madison, we'll go to you next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Well, you're very welcome. I am delighted to be able to ask this question, because I have found that physicians do tests to confirm or dispute their own expectations and don't necessarily follow up with what the findings are as far as any other modalities if they don't find anything that they were expecting. My husband is in his late 70s, and he has a gait problem. He has not been diagnosed with Parkinson's, but he has had a CT scan of his cervical vertebrae, and several of them, C4, C3, C4, 5, 6, I think those are the ones, all have a compression. So they've all been compressed down. There's not a narrowing, but he has no pain in his neck, but he complains about a lot of stiffness in the rest of his spine. Is there something that we ought to be looking into other than waiting for the next problem to arise for the physician to evaluate?
Hmm.
So this is a primarily a gait problem?
It's a gait problem. It may also be a cognitive problem, or it may be associated with a cognitive problem. But he tells me most mornings that his back hurts, but it's not in his neck that it hurts. But he has some difficulty in moving his neck up. He says it doesn't hurt, but his neck is usually quite down.
So what did the cervical, he had cervical imaging?
No, he had a cervical CAT scan.
Okay, yeah, so imaging there. And what did the physician say about that, and has he seen a neurologist?
Well, he did see a neurologist. It was she who ordered this test, but she said, oh, there's nothing wrong with your neck. Although I read the report and it said there was a lot of compression in his neck, but she, I think, was looking for some evidence that there was a narrowing in the spinal space that might explain some of his confusion and some of his gait problem.
Okay. You know, I think
that's what she was looking at.
I think my next step would be to ask for a referral to neurologic physical therapy and have them assess him. So you can put it under the category of this gait problem that appears to have some sort of neurologic basis, but I would get him in to see a neurologic physical therapist who can do a full neurologic exam on him and see if they can find anything that might move him a different direction towards a different diagnostic assessment to see if they can figure out what's causing this. And again, it sounds like you have one of those Venn diagrams where you have overlapping cervical stuff, lumbar stuff, cognitive stuff, and gait stuff. So you need somebody who can sit down and spend a good hour doing a solid neurologic exam and see if they can piece this out.
And in you're in Madison, so I expect, Laura, that there are plenty, well, there are people here that are...
Absolutely.
So within the UW health system, there's they have neurophysical therapists in numerous locations.
Yeah, particularly the Middleton Clinic.
Middleton Clinic on University Avenue.
Is where a lot of them are housed. Mm-hmm. So
worth a look, for sure.
Yeah, that's where I'd go next, since you seem to have hit a wall from the physician end of it.
Right.
And right now, if you talk about more imaging, like what imaging would you do? Where would you go? What would you image? So I think you need another physical assessment to see if you can narrow down what might be next.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's very helpful. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you for calling. Fred in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Fred.
Hi, thank you. Yeah, I was diagnosed probably about a year or two ago with abdominal diastasis.
Mm-hmm.
Diastasis,
yep.
I think it is, yeah. And, you know, about 3 years ago, I started putting on weight, and I was, you know, I had normal proportions prior to that. My BMI was around 27 or 28, and then I started putting on weight and mostly around the middle, and 30 pounds over the last 3 years. I was working in a school system, and there was this little cough going around. Everybody had it, and so I was coughing a lot for a long time and developed an umbilical hernia, which was repaired about a year ago, but I still have this abdominal diastasis. And I guess my question is, you know, is there hope for bringing these muscles back together? Is it best for me to try and lose this weight, which is obviously we all know how hard that can be, especially as you are older. I'm 64 years old. And I've never been a gym rat. I've never really worked my core the way I probably should have been over the years. But, you know, and do I need a specialist as a physical therapist?
So those are all great questions. And so diastasis, we usually call it diastasis recti, is where you get a separation between your rectus abdominis muscles, kind of a split in that connective tissue. So our listeners can have an understanding of what you're talking about, Fred. And with regards to who should you see, there actually are people who specialize in this. There are physical therapists who specialize in pelvic health, women's health. We commonly see this in women during pregnancy. So actually a women's health specialist would be the individual I would see, right, Lori?
Right. Yeah. And I think they're moving away from the term women's
health.
Yes,
I think it's pelvic health.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. There are people here in the UW system who specialize in that, and there are specific ways to train. In answer to your question of, you know, losing that weight, yes. And you don't have to be a gym rat. So
no.
Going back to one of our mantras is you need to figure out what you like to do that's active, and then you need to do it. It doesn't mean you have to go to the gym. It doesn't mean you have to lift weights. It doesn't mean you have to start a jogging program. It means you need to figure out what you like to do that's active, and then do it. And then on the other side of it, watching what you eat, eating a healthy diet, eating low on the food chain, all those things that the nutritionists tell us to help decrease that abdominal fat. That is the most unhealthy place to hold extra weight. So people who hold it in their legs or elsewhere, not as hard on your heart. But people who carry most of their weight through their abdomen are at a higher risk of a number of serious medical conditions. So not only for your diastasis, but for your general health, I would certainly encourage you to try to lose the weight. And the physical therapist that you see about your diastasis can also help you figure out what are the things that you can do and guide you in that program. And just know, It's I call it the slow boat wins the race. Mm-hmm. You know, some quick weight loss, it's not the way to go. This is going to take months. It took you a long time to put it on. It will take you a long time to take it off, but it's going to be easier than trying to make dramatic changes in your lifestyle that are not comfortable for you. So making small changes over time will pay off.
Yep.
Good luck, Fred. Thanks for calling. By the way, I like to get up in the morning and just go and walk, jog a little bit, but walk mostly 2-3 miles mm-hmm. every morning. Mm-hmm. Just mm-hmm. do that. And that, I think, helps me yep. a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. Yeah, you got to find the time of day that works for you. All of those things are factors.
Yeah.
Right.
For me, it's 5:30 in the morning.
Exactly. Well, you know, that's important, though, Larry. It is the old know thyself.
Right.
So I was talking to a couple of my kids. One of my kids went to the gym last night at 9 o'clock, and I looked at him. I went, oh my God, I could never go to the gym at 9 o'clock at night. If I don't exercise before noon, it doesn't happen.
Right.
So
yeah.
When I think about my day, I start by filling in the slot for my exercise, when it's going to happen and what I'm going to do, and I build my day around that. I don't let other things take priority.
Right. I used to put in my calendar gym. J-I-M.
Oh.
And my boss said, who do you meet with at gym 4 times a week? And I said, it's actually going to the gym, mm-hmm. but I needed to earmark time to make sure that I got it in. I think that's very important. You owe yeah. it to yourself.
It's nice out there at 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning,
isn't it,
Fred?
It's quiet. It's peaceful. There's a lot of people who use that time to kind of get focused on their day.
I mm-hmm. look at all the neighbors' flowers.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. all that.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah.
Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Jody in Dubuque, Iowa, we'll go to you. Hi, Jody.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm enjoying your show, and I had a quick question. I've had an MRI, and I've had some low back pain for quite a long time. I'm fairly active. I'm 70 years old. The MRI showed that my L4 and L5 I'm not sure what the technical term for it was, but the spinal surgeon told me that the only way I've had a lot of sharp pain on the right-hand side below my waist in the back. I have degenerative disc disease and arthritis. But the surgeon had said that the only way to get rid of this pain would be spinal fusion. I have been going to physical therapy for over 6 weeks now, and I've had some really good results doing core exercises and stretch exercises. I have trouble when I sit, more pain when I sit or drive, although that's gotten a little better. And when I get out of the car now, I can stand up straight. I can sleep okay, and I can stand up and work all day. I don't, because then I'll give myself some other pain from arthritis and that. But yeah. But my question is, I keep pushing back the surgery because I've talked to a lot of different people who've had spinal fusion surgery, and the physician himself, the surgeon, told me that it puts stress on your spine above and below where you've had the
fusion.
Fusion.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep.
And people, yeah. And one day I walked out of the clinic and I was talking to a man who'd had the surgery that they want me to have, and he was in a lot of pain. So that didn't help me. I've been pushing the surgery back, and my therapist and I'm real happy with her. I can't take cortisone shots for pain because I just can't take steroids. So, and I don't take ibuprofen. It doesn't really help that sort of pain anyway. It's kind of like I get out of alignment and then it's like a stabbing pain back there. You probably know what I'm talking about.
Right.
But I'm going along okay. And
wonder, do you need to have the surgery?
Yeah, I think you've answered
yeah.
that. I think you answered your question, Jody. So if you're continuing to improve, you have to ask yourself, what is, given where I'm at now and how I feel, what's the margin for improvement with surgery? Like, how much better can I get than I am now, and at what cost? So the cost, as you identified, is the additional stress on the levels above and below. L4, L5, not very well designed by our maker. And so it does bear a lot of load. Just because you have findings there doesn't mean that stabilizing there is going to take care of your symptoms. So I would, if it were my back, I would continue to see as far as I can get with physical therapy. Know that you made a lot of gains in just 6 weeks, but typically this is a longer term thing. Like, I would give continuing exercise with periodic checks with your physical therapist anywhere between 6 and 12 months and see where you're at.
Exactly. You haven't even plateaued yet. So yeah. You're on this nice upward spiral. You know, let's see when you start to plateau, which will probably be somewhere between 6 and 12 months. What is it that you can and cannot do? Or do you have more good days than bad days? And kind of reassess that. You may have bought yourself a whole lot of time before you have surgery. You may never need surgery. So I think you're definitely on the right track. And it sounds like what you're doing is working. And I just keep moving along. And as Lori says, slow and steady wins the race.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was thinking about this. The L4 and 5 come up so often in our shows that we do together.
Right. Oh, yeah. Right, right. They do. They, because of the way your lumbar spine is designed, there's a lot of curve. There's a lot of stress at L4, L5. So in the absence of that pelvic tilt that we talked about at the top of the show, for people who can't keep their pelvis in good alignment, it simply increases the shear load at L4, L5. So that's why that pelvic tilt that we discussed at the very top of the show is really important, because it helps distribute the loads throughout your low back more appropriately and puts less stress on L4, L5.
If you, and here we've had this question come up, if you're have chronic low back pain and you have to sit in your job all day, what can you do? Somebody driving a truck, maybe, or
right. Well, there's driving a truck also brings in vibration, which can be a factor, but you need to make sure that your environment is set up appropriately for you. So you need to make sure that, for example, a truck driver, or another big one is a pilot, is need to make sure that you're not reaching for the pedals to make sure that you're an appropriate distance from the gas and the brake. That's really important. To make sure that your seat back is in a good position. So you may need a lumbar roll, and you may need a lumbar roll that's big, or you may need a lumbar roll that's smaller. And a physical therapist can help you with those things. The other thing you consider with driving a truck is to make sure that your rear view mirror is positioned appropriately. So you have to keep your head up. So if you start slouching, you can no longer see in your rearview mirror. That's a really good tactile cue to make sure that you always kind of stay in an upright posture. Then, of course, the challenge with a truck driver or a pilot, someone like that, is we really want people to take frequent movement breaks and change position frequently. And that those are a couple professions where it becomes really challenging.
Yeah. And one of the callers earlier said that while they were driving, they were doing their pelvic tilting.
Right.
So you can pelvic tilt while you're driving.
Exactly.
So
on that happy note, we're out of time. Lori and Jill, thank you so much. And you'll be back in about exactly a month
perfect.
From today.
Perfect.
Practically, we'll do it all over again. Jill Tai-Nissenbaum, Associate Professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy Program at UW-Madison. Lori Tyne-Brody, Physical Therapist and Athletic Trainer at UW-Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. And they will be back, and we will do this again. Coming up tomorrow, take a peek at the rich history of Door County. Then we'll talk with the author of the latest in the Dave Kubiak Door County Mystery Series. It's ending. It's the last in the series. So I read it. It was a lot of fun, and we'll talk about it tomorrow. In the meantime, thank you so much for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.